Welcome back to Berkeley Grox, only here on 90.7 FM, KALX. Immortality. Since the beginning of time, man has struggled to achieve a state of perpetual life, but to no avail. Although there have been tremendous advances in biological medicine, it still is impossible to hold back time indefinitely. Or is it? Perhaps physics has the answer. Well, joining us today on Berkeley Grox is Professor Frank Tipler, author of The Physics of Immortality and the Anthropic Cosmological Principle. He will be joining us today to discuss his theories on the final state of the universe, what he calls the Omega Point. Professor Tipler, thank you very much for joining us today on Berkeley Grox.
It's my pleasure, Charles.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about your theory of the Omega Point?
Yes. What I'm claiming is that the laws of physics require life to eventually expand out from this planet and engulf the entire universe and gain control of it. And as the universe is evolving into the final state, which I claim the laws of physics require to be a contracting universe into a final singularity, their energy control will grow without limit. Power, in other words, will be very abundant. And with this unlimited power coming from the collapse of the universe itself, they will be able to run computers with arbitrarily increasing power, in particular, more rapid processing rate going to infinity at the end of time, but also the capacity of these computers, the storage capacity, will grow without limit toward the end of time. Now, in such an environment, it would be possible to recreate every man, woman, and child who has ever existed in the whole of Earth's history as a computer emulation near the final state, and once we're recreated as a computer emulation, we would never die again. We would survive until the very end of time, which is, in terms of information processing time, unlimited into the future.
I see. And so, does the universe have a definite end there?
That's the end. It's a final singularity. Uh-huh. It's called the Omega Point because one way of discussing singularities was worked out about a quarter of a century ago by the famous British mathematician Roger Penrose. And in the case that the singularity has no what we call event horizons, barriers to communication between one side of the universe and another, Penrose's construction says that the singularity has to be a single point, which is why I call this final singularity, the very end of time, the Omega Point.
I see. And is there any evidence to support this Omega Point collapse of the universe?
The only major physicist who has supported me is Professor David Deutsch of Oxford University. His approach is similar to mine. We believe that we can regard the universe as a gigantic computer. All processes in the universe are to be regarded, in other words, as computations. Now, in such a worldview, you can ask for natural boundary conditions. The natural boundary condition on a computer is either no processing, no memory whatsoever, or limitless memory, mm-hmm. which corresponds to what we call a universal computer, a universal Turing machine being one example. So the natural limits on computation are there are no limits, and imposing that as a natural boundary condition from computer science on the universe leads us into the conclusion that the universe has to be as I say.
And so this final state of the universe is basically the universe acts as a computer that's recreating all the previous lives.
Yes, yes. The universe as a whole must admit a universal computer, is what we say. And the universe is ultimately a universal computer.
I see. Part of your theory, I guess, suggests that the universe has to recollapse at some point.
Yes.
But this depends, I guess, as you said in your book, on the Hubble constant being a specific...
Yes. Now, there's one mistake I made in my book. Namely, I did not anticipate, I should have, but I did not anticipate that the universe was undergoing an acceleration period in its expansion phase. Mm-hmm. In my book, I predicted, because it followed from basic physics, that there had to be an accelerating phase, but I assumed it would only occur in the contracting phase. Now, in a later development of my theory, which I've now published, you can argue that the universe will go through an accelerating phase, as it's observed to be doing now, but eventually that accelerating phase will be switched over to a deaccelerating phase, followed by a recollapse into the final state.
I see. And how's this switchover taking place?
Well, the mechanism I propose is similar to the mechanism I propose for the very end of time. The mechanism at the very end of time to eliminate horizons, these barriers to communication, is the action of living things itself in the universe. What I am proposing is that the living things now will, so to speak, eliminate matter, which is the cause of the current acceleration according to the standard model of particle physics.
And these living organisms then will cause the collapse in a very specific way?
Yes.
What then also you suggest then that eventually the universe will then re-emulate all the past lives that have existed. Why do you propose that this should be the case?
Well, it's technically feasible, the first thing to establish, because the computer capacity of the universe is increasing without limit. And it must increase without limit in order to have life to be able to manipulate a universe whose complexity is increasing without limit as it goes into the final state. And it has to increase without limit, this complexity, and hence life's ability, because otherwise elimination horizons would be impossible, and that would imply a violation of either the Heisenberg uncertainty principle or the second law of thermodynamics, very firmly attested physical laws. Now, I'm claiming that life in the far future would use their power to emulate past life because they would be interested in where they came from. Right now, for example, we have early life laboratories created across the world trying to reproduce the process that led to that first living cell, which was our ultimate ancestor. Similarly, life in the far future would be interested in emulating us because we are the first intelligent life form in the universe, their ultimate ancestor.
But how would we know if we were in fact recreated at that point, or would it be distinctive to us as being an emulation?
Well, if it was a perfect emulation, it would be you and me reproduced again, and also we are designed to exist in a current environment which we found ourselves, so that would have to be re-emulated too. Now, eventually, I would propose that the beings who bring us back into existence in the far future would let us know that we have been brought back into existence. If they could, for example, modify very slightly the environment in which we found ourselves into the far future to let us know that we are the resurrected version rather than the original version. If it weren't an emulation, which is a computer simulation that's perfect, it wouldn't be us brought back into existence.
What else has to happen in terms of the evolution of the universe in order for this omega point to actually form?
Well, first of all, we actually have to move off this planet in order to engulf the universe, because without our active participation, I should say our descendants' active participation, because we as human beings are evolved for a particular type of environment which is utterly unlike the environment in the universe near the final state. So our descendants, I should say, will have to expand off this planet in order to engulf the universe and start to manipulate it in such a way to allow what I call horizon disappearance, that is to allow unlimited amount of communication across the universe. And that is also a thing that must occur, the elimination of the horizons. As it turns out, that will also be the state that we have, our descendants will force the universe into in order to extract maximum amount of information, maximum amount of energy from the collapse of the universe.
I see. And this horizon elimination, can you explain a little bit more about that?
In a normal collapse of the universe, that is one without the participation of life, what we would expect is for the universe to collapse uniformly, say, and in the uniform collapse of the universe, what would happen is the universe would collapse so fast that light ray, starting out from any point in the universe, any event in space-time, we say, would not be able to circumnavigate the universe before the universe ended, before it hit the final singularity. We can see something like that in the past. What happens is the universe, as you know, is 15 billion years old, and that means we can see out only 15 billion light years, because light has not been able to travel more than 15 billion light years.
Right.
Now, there is more universe beyond that. The universe, although closed, is very close to what we say is a flat universe. That means it's something like the surface of the Earth, but enormously large. For our observations are not sufficiently precise to actually show that it's actually closed. Just like if you look out your window, it looks like, except for the mountains, a pretty flat planet. You don't see any evidence of a curvature if you, for example, look over the Golden Gate and look into the Pacific Ocean.
Right.
If you do a very careful measurement using a telescope, you'll notice the Earth is curved because you will see the tops of the ship appearing over the horizon before the rest of the ship. But only a careful measurement will show you that, and we have not developed the instruments which are capable of showing the similar curvature of the universe, which has to be there following from the known laws of physics. Again, we know that there must be universe beyond the 15 billion light years which we can actually see out. Now, those are horizons, but they're in the past rather than the future. But they show you what a singularity can do in terms of generating horizons.
I
the
see.
Initial singularity, the Big Bang singularity, was 15 billion years ago. Now, in the case of the collapse of the universe, what would happen is life can stop the collapse in one direction, allowing a light ray to circumnavigate in that direction while the universe collapses more rapidly in the other directions. Now, what life will do is force this direction in which horizons disappear, like circumnavigates, to alternate in all directions an infinite number of times between now and the final state.
I see. So it doesn't collapse symmetrically. It's more of an anisotropic kind of collapse?
Exactly. And that anisotropic collapse also gives rise to a temperature difference between one side of the universe and another, and that can be used to extract energy, just like we are now extracting energy from this hot spot in the sky, which we call the sun.
I see. Well, that sounds like quite a condition for the omega point to form, though.
Yes, but the laws of physics are going to require that to be the future evolution.
I see. Well, it looks like we're running a little bit out of time. I guess just in closing, I guess, what led you to go down this line of research?
Well, I was trained in an area called global general relativity, which is looking at the universe on the largest possible scales, especially in a temporal direction. Because we know, as Einstein showed us, that space and time are, so to speak, the same thing. They're integrated into one entity called space-time. Now, I realized that we are looking at the universe extremely early in its history. The universe is only about 15 billion years old, but there are at least 100 trillion years to go. Much more time in the future than in the past. So I knew that if I wanted to look on the universe in the largest possible scales, especially including its temporal direction, I was going to have to concentrate on the evolution of the universe into the ultimate future.
Into the future.
And computer science shows the way.
Okay.
Realizing the universe has to be a computer shows you what conditions you have to impose on the universe. And then once you know that, you can then use the laws of physics to show this evolution is in fact inevitable.
Well, Professor Tibbler, sounds like a very plausible and intriguing theory. I thank you very much for joining us today on Berkeley Groks.
My pleasure.
You are just listening to Professor Frank Tipler of Tulane University discuss his theories of the final state of the universe, as explained in his book, The Physics of Immortality. You are listening to Berkeley Groks only here on 90.7 FM, KALX. Coming up next, find out just exactly how does a tornado happen. So stay tuned.